Hello and welcome to the Max Moo podcast. This is Lindsay, the founder of Max Moo. Thank you so much for joining us. This is just a reminder that you can find the Max Moo podcast on iTunes, where you can subscribe and be sure not to miss out on any episodes. The other thing you can do on iTunes is leave a review. And if you are listening to the podcast and enjoying it, we would so appreciate it if you would go and leave a many-starred review with a few kind words. You can also find us on Facebook at Max Moo NY. That's MaxMooNY. There we post about our favorite shows beyond Broadway and other tips and reviews. Not a lot of introduction is needed for today's podcast, so we'll get right to it. Enjoy the show.
I watched Merrily We Roll Along via digital theater this morning to do research.
I have to be honest with you. I was looking for stuff because I have never actually been to anything but the Met.
Oh, okay. Oh, the Met Live stuff?
Yes. And I didn't find the Merrily because I've seen clips.
Yeah.
And it's shameful that I haven't, but I work all the time. So
yeah, no. So digital theater. Theatre. Ari.
Okay, that's good to know.
That's the company. They do the stuff. All right, so we are gathered here today. we're gathered to chat about the broadcasting of performance art performances. Performance art performances? Is that how you say that?
Performing
art. How would you say theater?
I would say... I try not to use the word theater sometimes. What do I say? I say digital theater or broadcast performing arts.
Broadcast performing arts.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, well, let's start with introductions.
Hi, this is Nicole. I write about theater at Mildly Bitter's Musings and the Craptacular.
Awesome. And we have a special guest, Catherine Jones, CEO and founder of Virtual Arts. And I'm Lindsay, founder of Max Moo, a website about theater beyond Broadway. So why don't we start, actually, Catherine? Do you want to give us the, like, what is Virtual Arts TV?
Yeah, so Virtual Arts TV is the first company dedicated to live streaming theater, dance, and music. So I believe that we have actually invented we have the opportunity to invent a new model of live performing arts. Everything we do is multi-camera, all edited in real time, stream live to the internet. We have streamed to tens of thousands of people across the world without a marketing budget, which to me says a lot about what I know we're going to talk about, which is where are the audiences for theater and how are we reaching those audiences and what does that mean for the future of theater? And one of the things that's really important to us, as opposed to I know what we're going to talk about, are these wonderful, wonderful broadcasts of theater. One of the things that's important to us is we're streaming specifically for the internet, so all of our productions are tailored, all of our live streams are tailored to an internet audience, so we are shooting for a much smaller screen than they are shooting for, and we're also making it as interactive for our audience as we possibly can in a way that feels native to the actual piece. So we encourage our audience to tweet to Facebook. We even have an app that lets them do that. And we also will, when it is appropriate, insert those comments into our actual show so that our audience in Barcelona or Australia actually sees their comments in the show and our in-house audience sees that they're part of a global experience. So we are very, very specifically live streaming to the internet.
Cool. All right. Well, you raise a lot of questions in your introduction. So I thought what we could do is start by talking about some of those big issues and then narrow it down and talk about some of the recent performances we saw, which is to tease that we will be talking about Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller in Frankenstein and Tom Hiddleston in Coriolanus.
And the shirtless performances therein, yes.
You have many shirtless performances. I thought you were going to do a little squeal and say, ooh, cute ginger. This is a callback to our last.
Oh, God. Highly relatable.
I was trying to be professional since we had a guest. But fine.
Sorry, I outed you. I outed you as not professional. Okay. So, I mean, the thing about this is, I love theater for the following reasons. It consumes your attention 100%. You can't be looking at your phone. You can't be having a side conversation. You can't be checking your email. And as a person who has an infinitesimal attention span and is easily distracted, I find it's the single form of entertainment where I'm truly able to focus and consume what I'm watching without distraction. And that's unique to theater, where there are performers on stage who you must show your respect to. You are a collective in the audience, and if you do something, you will distract the experience of the fellow audience members. And anything can happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like something can go wrong. And so there's this heightened, I don't know, anxiety or enthusiasm or awareness for that. And translating that to a digital format changes some of it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So let's chat about the pros and cons of the digital experience. Nicole?
I think the one key thing about the digital experience is access, is the ability to see performances you otherwise wouldn't be able to see, whether there are geographic limitations, cost limitations. I don't think, and I think this is one of the reasons why I get annoyed when people are like, people are going to stop going to theater if you put it on a movie screen. They're not.
We can all agree that's total bullshit, right? Like, that's not an argument we have to have here. Okay, okay.
Thank you, no.
No.
Okay, good.
Because I really think people know what they're experiencing is different from theater, and it is, you know, on some level a substitute because of necessity. But I think there are also other experiences where it, you know, I was thinking, like, when we saw Purge, Brian Lobel's piece in Edinburgh, he had it live with his Facebook feed up, and he was live streaming it. So, you know, there was a way for you to, if you happen to tune in at the right time, experience something only happening in that moment, and that unto itself becomes a really special, unique experience. And so there, you know, there will be the theatrical opportunities to see something you'd otherwise not get to see, but then there are also these sort of intentional digital live stream experiences which give you just a different kind of experience. And I don't mind, like, I kind of like live tweeting certain kinds of events. And I mean, recently I was watching the Brokeback Mountain, the opera, which was live streaming, and tweeting my experience of watching it as I was going along, which certainly wouldn't have happened if I actually had gone to Spain and sat in a theater and seen it there. But it was a way to sort of dialogue with people about that work as it's happening before me. And also ask questions like, what am I looking at? Does anyone know?
Right. So one of the major bonuses for translating things into a digital format is access for more people.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other pros from your perspective, Catherine, as somebody who, this is your business.
This is my business and it's my passion. But I also have to say that I agree with both of you about both of those things that you said. And I talk about my age a lot because I feel like it actually really informs the work that I've done. I'm in my mid-40s. I began with theater exactly, I mean, in a very, very traditional sense. I majored in theater in college. I am passionate about, yeah, that in theater experience that you're talking about. That is entirely, it takes all of your attention. So why the heck am I working in this world where I don't expect my audiences to necessarily be there the whole time. And I don't expect them, and I want them to Twitter. And then it has become a passion for me, and I have started to really love that experience. But it really started as something very pragmatic, meaning one of the things we talk about in this industry all the time is that audiences for live performance have been on a decline for 30 years and a steady decline. It's like, I can't, it's like 2% a year for 30 years. The industry is in a crisis. However, when you look online, when you do this stuff online, all of a sudden people are coming out of the woodwork. And one of the reasons I got this idea for this work, and I hadn't, when I started working in live streaming, it wasn't with theater, is an actor I knew told the story of being at a show. And, some people didn't come back after intermission. They stayed out in the hallway because they wanted to watch it on the monitor and talk with their friends about it. Now, I was shocked by that, and that's not what I would choose, but I went, oh my God, there's this necessity. So I kind of didn't answer your question, but I kind of wanted to say, like, as the person who's like the, who's devoted my life to the digital stuff, I also totally agree with your love for, like, in-house theater, but there's so many pragmatic opportunities when you take that experience beyond it. And I think it is like what you were saying, it's a special experience. It's not the same experience, but it's a special experience.
And both can exist.
And I think both can exist.
And they need each other.
And they need each other. Like, also, I know I mentioned the story to you, Lindsay. One of my favorite stories, which has nothing to do with digital theater, is Michael Christopher, who is, I can't remember his title, head of the Kennedy Center. When they brought their beautiful production of Follies here to New York City, they lost money on it. And yet he said it was one of the best things he ever did for the Kennedy Center because it raised the awareness of the Kennedy Center on certainly a national level, if not a global level. And that is a lot of what we're talking about. Even if there isn't an immediate ROI, which I think there can be, that's what I think we're talking about. And I totally didn't answer your question.
ROI, return on investment.
Yeah. Yes.
You're using startup lingo.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. But that's one thing, actually, that's interesting about digital theater, I guess I've adopted that phrase, is that it comes in many different shapes and sizes. So, Nicole, you mentioned Brian Lobel's piece, which is what you were talking about is a performance that incorporates digital elements.
Yes.
And then you have live performances that are live streamed, which is the equivalent of watching a like sporting event. It's happening on stage somewhere. You're in a theater in a second location and seeing exactly what's happening. Then there are rebroadcasts of those live performances, which is more like the equivalent of going to a movie that was filmed. It was, I don't need to explain that. I think everyone understands what a rebroadcast
how movies work.
Is. Yes.
You'd be surprised, but you know what? With that Phaedra, they tried to sell that as live from England, but I was like, really? I'm Helen Mirren's performing at 1 a.m. So initially they did try to sell that as live, but it was a 6 hour later rebroadcast.
And I think because sometimes the NT Live will broadcast live in the UK and we get essentially, the rebroadcast.
I think that's what they generally do. Yeah.
And so what do you think the benefits are to the performing arts? You talked about potentially additional revenue streams and expanding the audience that it is available to. And yet, there's massive resistance to this.
Well, there's massive resistance in this country. Yeah. There's not massive resistance in other countries. You know, I struggle with this all the time. I beat my head against the wall about this all the time. Why the massive resistance? Who knows? I mean, theater's a business, right? And if you look at, so the Met, Peter Geld told me as part of an audience, but I asked this question, like, they're making serious, serious revenues from this. One of the fears, of course, is what we talk about is the cannibalization. But you know what? Just to be super simple, the performing arts industry, specifically theater more than dance and music, has been resistant to technology from the beginning. And I think it's just an unknown. And the prices are crazy high. The production prices for doing like what the Met does or when Broadway broadcasts are insanely high. I don't think they need to be that high. But that's the model they're working from right now. So it scares them. It's also an industry where only 25% of Broadway shows are actually making a return on that investment in the first place. So we'll see what happens with this Romeo and Juliet, which is a slightly different model of that. But I think the simple answer is traditionally theater people are resistant to change.
But even film people were resistant to change. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the fear of the VHS originally and now, you know, certainly when the internet kicked off and became a big space, all the traditional media outlets were like, wait, no, we're not comfortable with putting things on the internet. We want to be able to make money. How can we monetize? And yeah.
One other topic I want to talk about before we get to the specific shows that we've enjoyed is, can this benefit smaller theaters, or is it only benefit to the Met, NT, the National Theater in London, and Broadway-sized company
theaters?
That's
up to the unions. And what I mean by that is, like, when we stream, because we're streaming to the internet, and sometimes I've done it with unions, and I am an ex, just so you know, like, I was a member of Actors Equity, I was a member of AFTRA. Those days were very, very proud days of my life, and I'm no longer a member of those unions because they haven't let me do the work I want to do. And I've worked with union and without union. But we can do what we do and reach tens of thousands of people for between $2,000 and $20,000. And, you know, as we grow, those numbers will probably grow to more like $40,000. But once you do that, then the answer is yes. Then you have off-Broadway theaters. You have regional theaters that have limited ticket sales. They have their ticket sales are limited by their geography. They're not for profit. So they need the largest base they possibly can to get people to donate to their companies. Yes, then it becomes financially feasible. I think creatively exciting. Yeah, but it starts with the unions, because right now what the unions want to charge you is it's just not possible for a small theater company. Right now it's very, very, very multi-million dollar Broadway based. But I think potential, you don't know. No one knows till you do it. I think there's potential here to save a lot of small theaters.
Interesting. One reason I ask about the smaller theater thing is, well, first of all, it's part of Maximu's mission to support theater beyond Broadway. But secondly is because the performance that I saw most recently via broadcast was Coriolanus, which is by the Donmar Warehouse, which is a very respected London theater company that's had a lot of success, bringing productions over here to the U.S. And this production they're doing of Coriolanus with Tom Hiddleston, who is a movie star. I think he qualifies.
Yeah, I think at this point he's now a movie star and also dreamy.
Super dreamy. it's a small theater.
It's a very small theater. And it's not, I mean, it is technically physically located in the West End in London, but it's considered an off-West End theater. So it would be the equivalent of an off-Broadway theater here.
I just think it's fascinating.
It's tiny, too. Physically tiny.
You have this production that is very successful over there on its own terms, on the terms of it being a theatrical production over there. You hear stories about people sleeping out for tickets, and you have to assume that part of that is the superstar factor. But that's not something you hear at small theaters here in the U.S., is it?
Well, I'm trying to think of, like, what the, like, an equivalent situation where, you know, somebody, some megastar comes to the public and, you know, is performing a show with a very limited, well, I guess Bradley Cooper, when he did The Elephant Man up in Williamstown, would be the, you know, that sold out so quickly, no one who wasn't a member probably could get a ticket. So there wasn't camping out in the streets probably because there was no opportunity to see it, but it was a tiny black box, mega Hollywood star. And, you know, and now we're all, you know, it's allegedly coming to Broadway. But it, yeah, it's much more rare, I think.
We have such a different culture, too. I mean, theater is so much more. I don't think it is a coincidence that every TV show in America stars an Australian or a Brit. Like, they're awesome, awesome actors because they have so many opportunities because their culture embraces it a little bit more. But that doesn't mean I don't think there's a market for it here.
Right. Although, it does seem like there are approximately 10 British actors and they're all in all the shows.
I know.
Even watching Coriolanus, right? That one guy is on Sherlock. Isn't that right? I'm editing this part out. Like, it's a massive football. Isn't that guy Sherlock's brother?
Oh, yeah, Mark Gatiss. Sorry. I'm like, the not handsome guy, yes.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
But I just was like, wait a second. How can that guy's in that show and then Sherlock, meaning Benedict Cumberbatch, is in Frankenstein with Johnny Lee Miller, who's in a version of Sherlock in the United States called Elementary.
It's, yeah, there's only so many people working today, I guess.
It's funny, I don't think about it that way at all, but it's probably, there's truth to that, I'm sure.
Okay, let's talk about Coriolanus. Nicole, what did you think?
I love this. And I've seen a couple ND Live productions. So it, just to clarify, it is at the Dunmar Warehouse, but for some reason the National Theater partnered with them to do the broadcast through the ND Live banner. And most of the ND Live productions have been actual productions at the National Theater in London. So I've seen a couple of them, Curious Incident, The Nighttime with the Dog. I can never remember
which
the title.
Which is coming to the States, right?
It's coming to Broadway. Yay.
You sound lack enthusiasm.
I'm like the
about
only
that.
Person in the world who fucking
but
hated
you've
that.
Seen but it. Actually, this is now we're just jumping around, but this is unique, Nicole, because I think you've seen things both live and the recorded versions.
Yes.
Have you
so
done that?
See, Kevin? I'm no. paying twice, everyone. I'm evidence that you can make twice as much money if you're twice as stupid.
No, but I actually think that you're actually saying something that is really, really true about this particular audience. It tends to be a very, very passionate audience. It's not the same audience who's probably going to go to Wicked. It's not so much a tourist audience. It is a passionate audience. And there are passionate audiences for soccer, and you guys are passionate, thank God, are passionate audiences for theater. Thank goodness for you. But they exist. And I think that we aren't serving them.
Right. Well, it's funny because I have a friend who has finally sort of likened my theater going. She's just like, I don't see why people think it's weird that you go to the theater a lot or that you see things multiple times. She's like, you're just like a sports fan, mm-hmm. only like a theater fan. So, you know, it wouldn't be weird to say like, oh yeah, me and my buddies are getting on a plane. We're flying somewhere to go see the Giants play. Like, no one would look twice at you. But when I say, oh yeah, well, I'm going to London. Oh, what are you doing while you're there? Like, I'm going to the theater every night for 2 weeks. People are like, really? And that's it? That's a lot, guys. But yeah, so I saw Curious Incident. I saw Othello. I saw Othello live at the National Theater. Technically, I did fall asleep, but it was my jet lag day.
You did?
So, like, for the record, I just want to be clear. It was my jet lag day. It was the only time I could see it. I was in the second row, and I fell asleep for some of it. So I really apologize to Adrian Lester and Rory Kinnear. I'm really, really, really sorry. But then I did go back to see the ND Live broadcast.
Didn't you also do that at a really weird time? Like, it was early in the day.
It was an
or
early morning screening on a Saturday at BAM, because BAM, for some reason, does the NT Live screenings at like 10 or 11 a.m.
More reason to hate them.
I mean, I assume it's so that it doesn't actually get in the way of their actual movie theater going people. It's so annoying.
If we have the Hangover at 2, we have to get these NT Live out of the way.
Right, right, exactly. So, and then we saw Frankenstein and then Coriolanus. But I loved Coriolanus. Yeah, if we have any opportunity to make fun of BAM or complain about them, we do so.
Their spaces are so beautiful, though.
But no, like, they do great
jewel
stuff.
Boxes of assholes. I mean, come on. That doesn't make any sense. I know
what you mean.
It's beautiful spaces, but like, make them friendly to people. Like, why? You can make a beautiful space, but if it's not inviting and you are an asshole about it, then it makes it a lot harder to enjoy that.
Their website's terrible.
Their website is terrible. Like, I feel like every time the ushering is just awful. Like, nobody knows where anything is or where you're going. It's just, it's a complete shit show, and it's uncomfortable to sit there. And I've been a member for years, and like, I have this relationship where I break up with them, and then I don't go for a couple years, and then I'm mad I've missed something, and I go back, and then it feels like this terribly abusive relationship. So, but if you were interested in European theater in New York, it's one of the, you know, kind of a mandatory outlet to go to, but they don't make it easy.
That's interesting. It's so anti-business trends right now. Like, so many business trends are about customer service.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens with BAM.
Is there an example, Catherine, of you think of, like, this is what I would cite as a beautiful example of a live or streamed or whatever broadcast of a live performance? Like, is there something that you would point to that's available online where a person could go and say, oh yeah, I see what they're talking about. This is actually really pleasant and I'm learning something or I'm enjoying it.
Okay, so this is a tough one for me because I'm a huge believer in the actual live experience. And I kind of think that on demand doesn't work as well. Which isn't to say, like, I wouldn't, if Coriolanus was available, because I haven't seen it yet, I would probably, that play. I mean, first of all, that play is so it's spectacular in an incredibly violent, horrifying way. And I could sit through Coriolanus. But generally, I prefer the live experience. It's my background. And that's what I think is exciting and dynamic. Like, even so, okay, so this, I'm telling the opposite experience. Sound of Music Live. Did you guys watch Sound of Music Live?
Yes.
Okay. I did not.
I thought it was, this is what can I say about it. So, I won't curse. So, no curse word here. Exciting. Because it was, I mean, the Twitter feed was insane. And it was live. It was so exciting. And I don't want to say anything bad. Not my favorite play. Certainly not my favorite production of not my favorite play. And I couldn't sit through all of it. But it's an amazing example of just the excitement that is possible when you transcend the proscenium. You know, to plug our own stuff, but it's very on demand. We have about 25 different performances on our site, and you get a sense from watching it, a lot of dance, that it really is a different experience, that it's not a camera on the back of a room, that it's an up-close, personal, intimate experience.
And you said you do multi-camera, so it's like traditional television, live television of the olden days, where you have like three cameras, you call the shots as it's actually happening to get your best angle on.
Yes and no. Okay. The live television from the golden age was my inspiration in the first place. Okay. But I would say we're more like an online video, because we shoot for an online video. So meaning it's a lean forward experience when you're on, but online, it's what we call a lean-forward experience, and you know your customer, your user, is always maybe about to click away. So we're cutting much, much faster. We use actually usually more than three. I try to use 4 or 5. I've never done more than 5. I know I will one day. But our goal is, if the sound is off, it still should be visually compelling to you. So it's a very visual, lean-forward experience. Okay. But I'm trying to think what else I've seen online that I love. There's some opera that I've watched online that's really, I'm frankly not an opera fan, but I'll watch anything to see how people shoot it. And there's been some opera experiences that I've been really impressed with.
And are those Met performances or other?
Yes, I mean, Met, absolutely. Like, again, I don't like opera, but I will go to those because it's exciting. But no, I actually saw, and this is antithetical to what I always say, a one camera production of a live streamed opera from Canada in a tiny, tiny theater. And I found it really compelling. Partially the reason it worked was the theater was so tiny, but it was fun. And, you know, and for me, part of that experience was the tweeting and the Facebooking, because I was online. And it, of course, in the audience, that wouldn't be my choice.
Right.
It is somebody's.
I've done some live tweeting at shows. I know there have been some experimental options for that. And I did it at Good Bar, which was the Waterwell's production, sort of a rock opera-y thing at Under the Radar a couple years ago, and they encourage you to take pictures as it was happening. And I was so stressed out. I was like, oh my God, it's so hard to like watch and pay attention and take a picture and then say something about it. And I mean, it was great because I loved having the photos afterwards, but the live tweeting for me was just, it was like, it's too much. I can't handle it. when I want to, when I was actually really, really enjoying the show. If it was like the second time I saw it and I was doing it more from sort of a critical perspective, I think that would have been more helpful. But like as a first time seeing the show, it was hard and distracting for myself.
The camera angle thing is interesting because the first production I went to very reluctantly that was a broadcast was The Audience with Helen Mirren. Mm. And that is a very straightforward play. There's not a lot of action. It's the Queen of England meeting with a successive number of prime ministers, and it's conversational, and there's some flashbacks, but it all happens right there on a traditional proscenium stage. And much to my surprise, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was compelling, and I thought it was a different experience than seeing that production live. I'm sure it was, although I, of course, didn't. But I really enjoyed it, and I got a sense. I thought it was translated through the screen what was happening and what it would have been like to sit in the audience and see that show. And it happening in London, I couldn't be there. And so I'm really grateful that I got the opportunity to see that. The second one I saw was Frankenstein, which is the Danny Boyle production with Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch alternating roles between the doctor and the monster. And that is a much different production. It is... It's more of a, I was going to say 360 degree view, but that's they not the right the number
stage,
of degrees.
I know. They use the stage in a very different way. It's the Olivier Theater at the National. It's a sort of, I think they had it. It was a little bit of a thrust. Yep. So you get the sort of, you know, the audience is sitting around the stage.
There
size.
Were lights on the ceiling that I think contributed substantially to the atmosphere of the performance. And it was shot from many more camera angles, including angles that are not natural to the theater.
I like that you can't even get through this. You're right there.
I'm dying to hear if you loved it or hated it. I don't know where you're going.
Sorry. I was going to say two things.
Now I just got where you were going with that unnatural
the
theater
unnatural
angle.
The unnatural theater angle I was going to say is from the ceiling down.
Uh-huh.
But as but soon also- as I started to say it, I... One, the thing that jumped into my mind is this ongoing conversation we've been having post that show of these camera angles of Benedict Cumberbatch as the monster shot from really low and behind that you can't understand
up his crotch
what they're trying to communicate to you with that camera
right.
angle.
I mean, it's a choice. It's a maybe not natural theater angle, but...
We've come up with a lot of really vulgar names for that angle, but I'm not going to say them here because I couldn't even tweet them.
I mean,
them.
It was definitely a certain level of medical. It was a medical angle more than a theater angle.
How, and they sat on that shot a lot, so they liked the shot enough to keep repeating it.
Unnaturally a lot. I have no idea what they thought they were doing.
I was like, are you worried he has like a tumor somewhere? Like, why are we spending so much time in his testicles?
It was like a colonoscopy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
If you'd like to see Benedict Cumberbatch's colonoscopy, check out Frankenstein. Which I feel like that's why people got went to see it.
My point is I didn't enjoy it as much
because like shots like that took you out of the experience.
Oddly, that shot was repeated and was distracting, but I was like, I never view the theater from on top of the stage.
Bothered you. I get it.
It's like all of a sudden you're using film language in theater. And
or from behind, right? From the back of the stage outwards, not necessarily directly at the audience, but kind of at the audience.
You know, so this is my thought about it, and I haven't seen it, is this. Like, I feel like the point of filming it is to give the audience an experience that they couldn't possibly get in the theater.
It's totally fair.
But, and there's a huge caveat to this. Anybody, including me, who says they know what they're doing is full of shit. Can I curse?
Absolutely.
It's full of shit because nobody knows and no one's going to know. And we might 10 years from now chuck it all. We might decide this doesn't work. But the whole point now is it's all experimental. There's no blueprint. We're going to make a lot of mistakes. The hope is you don't make mistakes that alienate an audience. The hope is you still are treating an audience in a way that makes them want to come back and see. But I think that's really valuable information. And I think understanding why you didn't like it as well as something that was a little bit more traditional is really useful.
I mean, I thought Coriolanus, one of the interesting things about that was how, because the theater is so small and the camera placement and whatnot, how close you got. There were like close-ups mm-hmm. of Tom Hiddleston crying, and in a way that felt very filmic rather than very theatrical. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment where he has his back turned to a bunch of actors, and I thought, I was like, oh my God, if you were sitting on the other side of the theater, the entire emotional performance that's happening, you're missing. And that's what theater is sometimes.
Right.
And I think I really loved the play Tribes, which was you were seated all around the stage, and there are whole scenes where like actors are performing the other direction and you miss it. And that's intentional and part of David Cromer's vision of it. But you know, it was one of those moments where I was like, well, I'm sure people, I know people who both went and saw it and then were really excited to be able to see the NT live version because they, you know, paid for a partially view seat and all this stuff and would at least have the full opportunity to see more of the performance.
So I had an experience recently that was so similar to that. I saw Twelfth Night on Broadway with Mark Rylance, which is amazing. And I had a stage seat, but not a good stage seat.
Right.
Top, all the way inward to the stage. What is that? Upstage, downstage, I don't know. I was upstage on the very top row. And so it was an amazing theatrical experience, but I could only see half the stage. But I could see all of the, like literally all of the audience. And I could see everything the actors were doing when they had their backs turned to the audience.
Yes.
And it was amazing. And there's this one scene where Mark Rylance, the Olivia
He's
character,
Olivia, right? Yeah.
Yep. He thinks that he is kissing. Oh, shit, I'm gonna sound like an idiot.
Not Mariah.
I'm gonna get all their names wrong. Oh, Viola. He thinks that he's kissing Viola, but he's really kissing the person who looks like Viola.
Yeah. Sebastian?
Sebastian. And basically, Mark Rylance has so much lipstick on that he just coats Sebastian's face with it. But Sebastian has his back to the audience. And so Mark Rylance walks away, and the stage audience laughs a lot. And a full 30 seconds later, Sebastian turns around and the audience laughs.
Audience
and it was amazing. I was like, I just sat there like, oh, just you wait, audience. You're going to love this. And they did. It was amazing. It was amazing.
That
I was
fantastic.
Like, this is such an interesting experience. And Samuel Burnett, Burnett, who plays Viola, is amazing, and much ink has been spilled over his performance and what a revelation he is. But at times, getting to watch him react to the other to the other actors with his back to the stage, it was so intimate and just incredible.
The bench scene, I heard from somebody else who was in a stage, or who's actually in a box seat, so they were off to the side and got to really see his performance where he is acting upstage to no one.
I got to see that too. Yeah.
And that for her was actually one of the best parts of that scene.
Yes, because he has his back to the audience.
Right.
Okay, so you guys are like hitting on the thing that like makes me like do what I do, which is like the excitement and like the unrepeatableness of like that live experience and like that intimacy and that ability to see things that other people haven't been able to experience. Like, I haven't seen that. I got to see him do Jerusalem. I haven't seen any
so
of him.
Wonderful.
Oh my God.
Aren't you glad you gave up on your Shakespeare band for one day?
Yes, I am, because I saw
that's right, because you had a Shakespeare
12th
band.
12th Night and Coriolanus in the same day. You're welcome.
No way.
Yeah. 6 hours of Shakespeare. That's
oh my
a lot
word.
Of Shakespeare for a person currently on a boycott, but whatever. Yeah, well, then this totally, everything I just said, I feel like contradicts my statement that I want my broadcast performance to be from the angles that I would have if I were sitting in the audience, because there is something really special about getting to see part of the performance that you would not be able to see if you were in a stationary seat, sitting straight forward, looking at people act on stage.
And I think there have been a couple opportunities. Various plays have had sort of stage seating in that way. Mm-hmm. And I recently sat in stage seats for another show. And it is a very different kind of experience. Like, I love feeling like the actors walk across the stage and like your seat shakes or whatever.
Yes.
Like, you are like you're involved in a way in which you're not normally involved. And you're very conscious. You're like, I'm here and everyone can see me as well as I can see all of you in the audience. And I don't know. I love that. And I feel
I
like
love that you omitted the name of the show you're at, as though you're some kind of like shamed of it.
Well, we've already talked about it, but it's What's It All About, the Burke Bacharach reimagined.
People like it. It's okay.
People like it.
I just read the review for it.
It got positive
it
reviews.
It got a pretty decent
mostly.
Review.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off. You were saying.
No, it's fine.
So the fascinating thing about this conversation is that we're talking about experiences that are at the polar ends of the theater experience. Right, being extremely
right.
close to the action and being as far apart as you can be, meaning in another room where the people aren't acting
in
your
another country.
Physical presence.
Yeah.
And yet somehow those two things are where we've gotten to in this conversation,
yeah.
being where you can get with a broadcast performance.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I'm going to say this again, but like, we're just going to keep making mistakes, and we might chuck this all in 10 years, and not everybody's going to love everything. But theater in this country is in a crisis, and it's been in a crisis for a long time. And I think this is an opportunity for now to create new revenues, to maybe save it, and maybe give all of these unemployed actors, which we were talking about before, of which I was one for many years, jobs and money. Maybe people won't have to wait as many tables in the future.
I mean, there's just such a... I mean, maybe I spend too much time on the internet. We can put a pin in that idea later. Talk about later, theater therapy. But...
Theater therapy. That's a subtitle of our podcast.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
We've got a lot of issues around the table.
But, like, I see this passion for maybe really young people on Tumblr especially, and, you know, certainly through Twitter as well, for, you know, bands that they love to follow or actors that they really, really love. And, I mean, there are clips now, like, nonstop of Coriolanus shooting around Tumblr where I'm like, God damn it, you kids, stop filming things in theaters. You know, and I don't mean, like, the NT Live filming it, but, like, people from the audience members in their seats filming things and being distracting and being poor audience members. But there's obviously an audience for it and an enthusiastic audience and a community online of young people who are really interested in whether it's an actor, a performer, a musician, whatever it is. And giving, like, one of the bands I follow has been doing a lot of live streams of their performances at various
and bands. It's really, really popular.
Yeah. And so it's like my way, you know, I bought tickets to see the band on their tour. I saw them twice. And then I watched them perform at three different music festivals and got to see different lineups. And so the idea that, again, that this could cannibalize somebody's, you know, I guess if you have your limited budget of like, here's my $25 of arts budget for the month and I'm only going to spend it once and I choose the movie projection versus going to my local black box theater to see something, then I guess that person, you know, that
$25. But a high tide raises all ships.
100%. Yeah, I just think, you know, tap into those passionate audience members and their enthusiasm for this, and it just will keep growing.
There's something else to that, too, though. And I've brought this up a couple times. You talk about customer service, and that is the new kind of meme in business in general. How do we serve our customers? And there's blogs online about how we should never let people take pictures of your set because that's part of the experience, being surprised by the set. Or I've had this ongoing conversation with this one gentleman who says theater only exists in the space. Well, that's great, but your audience doesn't think so. And we're losing our audience. And ultimately, what does your audience want? So right now they want to be shitty audience members. All right, well then, but they're paying for tickets and creating new audiences and you change it eventually. But where's the customer service in our industry? How do you speak to where your audiences are?
But I want to make one point and then I want to talk about upcoming either broadcasts or live performances that we're all excited about. And the point is actually a sub bullet to where we started, which is that broadcast performances make theater available to more people. But an important element of that is more people who can't afford theater.
Oh, God,
because these productions, tickets to these productions are typically, I'd say, between like $20 and $30. And an actual ticket to that production is probably somewhere between $60 and $200. Or to Branagh's Macbeth, $300, or however much those mud seats are that you bought, Nicole.
Judge me, everyone.
Did you go? Judge me.
I'm going to go.
When it comes to the Armory.
Covered in mud.
So
I hope I get a commemorative poncho that he like signs or something. He spits on. I don't know.
I just think that is an element that is critical here, which is that this makes theater available to more people, especially more people who can't otherwise afford a lot of theater tickets. Now, I am a big advocate for saying that actually there's a lot of theater that's out there that's not that expensive, but a lot of theater is really expensive.
And define not that expensive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, $20. The same price that you would pay for a movie ticket. I think you can find a lot of theater in New York City that is quite good for that price. It's hard to find, but if you go to maxmoo.com, you can find it there.
But that's true. But also, I have to say, some off-Broadway things that I love... $75. And
it's on Broadway. Sure. Absolutely. And absolutely.
St. Anne's Warehouse, $45. And there's, oh my God, I want to see that red velvet curtain. What is that called?
Yeah, red velvet. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm dying to see that. $45 is actually pretty doable, but it's still $45.
Yep. No, true. I just think that it takes productions that are otherwise over $100 and makes them accessible to people who are not in the major metropolitan area where those performances are being done, namely New York and London. And for a ticket price that is substantially less than you would pay to go to that show. And even if you could afford the lowest ticket price, you'd be sitting in a nosebleed seat, whereas this is going to give you a much more up close and personal view of that performance.
Okay, what's coming up that we're all excited about?
I was going to say, like, filmed theater?
Anything you want. Oh, okay. Do you have any filmed theater? Do you have any film theater that's coming up that you're excited about?
Yeah, I guess I can say this. We're about to stream Bedlam's Hamlet to New York City schools.
Are you
serious? Yeah, and specifically to New York City schools.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's a pilot program. I've seen it twice. I'm going to see it many more times. I think their work is thrilling, thrilling, thrilling. And the opportunity to bring this kind of work to students is really exciting to me. So that's something we're doing. I'm really excited about the Red Velvet Curtain what is it called?
Red Velvet.
Oh my God. I'm going to have to drag my tail out to Dumbo and see that. I'm really excited about that.
Oh, funny. I'm going to something on Saturday, a concert of Julia Weldon, who you have a video of on your website.
I love Julia Weldon. She's awesome. Oh my God. That makes me so happy.
I'm seeing the Carol Churchill play Love and Information.
Right?
And that's...
Oh, you do? Wait. Let's pause. What do you like about her?
Carol Churchill?
We had a conversation about her on the last podcast that involved a lot of, I don't know, I think it sounds interesting.
Okay, well, I have to say, I see things from the perspective of an actor sometimes.
That's cool.
As less of an audience member. And there's so many characters that she writes that I want to play. That's such a selfish way of looking at a playwright. But it's the way I respond to a lot of theater, is like, what gets my gut? That's actually why I find I go to a lot of dance. Because when I go to dance, that's when that part of my head turns off. And I can really just experience something for the full experience of it.
That's cool.
I'm going to the closing performance of Twelfth Night.
I wish I was going to
from a stage seat.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That's going to be amazing.
I'm going to wear a special hat. I don't want to give it away to anyone.
But you're not going to block anyone else's view, are you?
No, it's not a big hat. It's like a little... I'm wearing a tiara. Okay, fine. I'm wearing a tiara.
You're wearing a tiara?
Yes. That will say Mariah on it, I think.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You're awesome. I love you.
Because we're big fans of Paul Chahiti, who plays Mariah in the play. So
tonight we're going to Rory Scovel, who's a stand-up comedian. Nicole and I are doing that together. That's because in 2 weeks we're going to do an episode about comedy.
Awesome.
What surprise?
Define comedy. That's going to be all about
It's funny.
Doesn't have to be.
On Wednesday, I'm going to the Pajama Men for the same purpose. They're a comedy duo that are very popular. They're from New Mexico.
Okay.
Friday, on Valentine's Day, I'm going to Kung Fu. That's a David Henry Huang play at the Signature Theater about Bruce Lee.
Oh, okay. All right. On Valentine's Day, I'm seeing this awesome dance piece at Joe's Pub, which I can't tell you the name of it because I can't remember, but it's at Joe's Pub, and I thought...
Oh, I think I got an email about that today, and I was really surprised by it because I can't imagine a dance piece at Joe's Pub. It's such a tiny
spot. They do a
lot
of dance pieces at Joe's, and it's this particular production company does a lot of... This particular festival company does a lot of dance at Joe's Pub.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that would be fun.
I'm really excited about this Bedlam thing you're doing. I think that's awesome.
I'm really excited about it, too.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's Max Moo podcast. Additional information about all of the things we discussed can be found at maxmoo.com. Just click on podcasts. You can find all of us on Twitter. Max Moo is at MAXAMOO. Catherine is at Virtual Arts TV. That's VirtualArtsTV. Nicole is at Mildly Bitter. That's MILDLYBITTER. And I'm at Lindsay Behrens. That's LINDSAYBARENZ. We'll see you next week.